developing in order to build smooth operating machines between the space. And so we're still learning. And our journey with the Airflow community has been really interesting. So this is just a refresher of the threat model. I'm not going to spend too much time on this today. We'll spend days like that. If you have been living under a rock, this is a quick refresher that basically every 18 months there is an absolutely spectacularly major supply chain attack. And every day there are all kinds of other attacks happening. So this is hard, right? We're still figuring it out. From the work that we did, one of the things that came out of this is that as a consumer of open source, which means everybody who is building something in open source, unless it's the bottom of the stack library, right? You have a responsibility and a need to look upstream and to make one of these choices. There's a different version of the last F. You have a choice. Either you're going to get involved and engaged in fixing the things, the problems upstream. You're going to fork it and copy the bits that you need and reduce the surface area of your risk. Or you're going to stop using something. There is a fourth F, and that's about funding. That's what my project does. I can tell you from 3 years of experience and spending close to $10 million, this is much harder than it looks. In particular, in those smaller projects, it is all but impossible to just turn money into security. They're already working nights and weekends. You can't buy more nights and weekends of their time. You can't turn them into security experts. You can't hire another person in that org. It doesn't work that way. And so there are real challenges to doing so. So Alpha Omega has a mission. Our goal is to go off and protect society by fixing this problem. Right? Is that we see it as a very long-standing mission. We are not funded to do all the security work or to fund all security work. So the word catalyze is critical to how we do things. We do so by investing across four separate types of investment categories. The first, turns out if you make it someone's job to worry about security, things get done. And in particular, in the Python Software Foundation, in Rust, in Eclipse, Ruby, I'm forgetting many, we've been able to hire the first security engineer in residence in those organizations. We pay for those roles. They hire them. They manage them. They set their goals and targets. We just say, have somebody whose job it is to care about this. And the impact has been astounding. The surprise impact is when we bring them into a room and have them talk to each other, even more great things happen. The second category is around package repositories. These are among the most leveraged points of influence over the SDLC, software development lifecycle, everywhere. Every developer, when faced with the problem of getting tab A into slot B and Googles the problem, finds an out-of-date Stack Overflow article that says, do not use this, and the fourth comment on the bottom says, npm install foo worked for me, and they're going to do it. And unless you have checks, policies, and gates in place, you're going to end up with foo and its entire transitive dependency graph till the end of time in your project. Category C is about audits. And I can't say this often enough. When we invest by putting an audit into a project and helping them audit their processes, their culture, their tooling, their code, we learn an awful lot about that organization's readiness to actually become focused on security. And so we tend to start with that because how they respond tells us a lot about whether they're ready to do more or not. And then finally, deeply acknowledging this is a new space and none of us know what the hell we're doing, we keep trying things and seeing how we can screw things up horribly and where it goes. Right? Making mistakes, trying new things is a key part of what we do. This is just some numbers. I'll skip over it. We spend a lot of money. This particular journey, I think, is worth wasting a little bit of time on because of how awesome it is. Is this supposed to move in some way?
Yes.
To click? Right. So that engineer at Python I talked about, Seth Larson, was hired by the Python Software Foundation. He was a longstanding member of the community, had an interest in security. We were able to fund his role. And he did amazing work and continues to do amazing work and is really a leader across all these organizations. Right? I single him out because I know him and I talk about him. Right? But he and I did a talk at PyCon. And because of that talk, Yarek came up after the talk. He says, this was a great talk. I want you to do the same talk at the Apache Airflow conference,
Summit.
And I'm like, I'm not doing the same talk again. We got to do something new. What are we going to do? And he's like, have I got an idea for you? And we had been doing things with Munawar already around scaled approach towards vulnerability discovery. And we did it by scanning things. And then the team came back and said, look, we scanned this many thousand things. We found this many percentage of vulnerabilities. We fixed this many. That many were accepted. And it was like rowing a boat out to the Pacific garbage patch, coming back with a pile of plastic. Yes, the garbage patch is smaller. I can't do anything useful with that information. And so we've been switching to this mindset of like, can we find a section of the beach that is well-defined? And I ask, Yorick, do you have a section of the beaches? I have the exact list. I have 719, that number is etched in my brain these days, dependencies, and I know the exact list, and I have these tools. I'm like, whew, we're going to do something together. And so that is what happened. And so Yorick is now going to do all the interesting stuff. I just talked about the setup, but it is very interesting about how we got here. It's about people. It is always about people. And change happens when you find the right people and do things together.
And now you get the microphone.
Okay. Thank you.
Give me this.
I'm going to have the clicker. Yeah, so that's the beach that we are going to clean together, and we are already doing that.
Okay. So yes, let's talk about airflow security. Because that's where it all started. So Airflow is already very, very active in its security, and there are some people here who can confirm that, because for example, I work with Arno, who is our Apache Software Foundation security response engineer, and we've built the security team together, and we work on it, and it's actually super active and works very well. But Airflow itself is a very active and big project. So we have like 150 active pull requests in a week, which were touched, or 76 active issues which were opened. We have 102 commits merged every week, or 124 commits merged on all branches within a random week. We have a lot of people working on it. We have a very big number of users. For these 14,000 is just the GitHub, but we had a lot of pretty much everyone who is processing data uses Airflow. Airflow is an data orchestrator, in case you didn't know. We have 3,200 almost contributors. That's the stat from today. I always update this slide before talking, because it keeps on going and very, very, very fast. And something happened, and this is the active Airflow insecurity. If you look at the history of Airflow, here is like a timeline, and you can see like those are commits and versions of Airflow. But at the top, those are the vulnerabilities that were discovered in Airflow, and you would see that at some point of time they start, of course the vulnerabilities were going down, because this is the how many open vulnerabilities in the history were. But at some point of time they started to go down faster, because we had invested in our security ourselves, in the security of Airflow as a project. So what we've done, we have a dedicated security team. I'll go very quickly, because this was just the base. We have created and documented the whole detailed process how we are dealing with the security. We introduced the security model describing our researchers and users how the security works in Airflow. We prepared canned responses to issues, because of course we are flooded with a number of issues. That's another story that we've heard recently, generated by different kinds of people, and we are responding to them in the same way, and we know how to. We disabled some inherently insecure features. We hardened our CI workflows. Quite recently, I removed a pull request target. By the way, if you're using pull request target in your GitHub workflows, stop doing that immediately. It's super insecure. We did. We introduced reproducible builds, which shows us that actually even the release manager didn't tamper with the Airflow builds when they were prepared. Sometimes some things that happened with XE or XZ depends. So we've done all of that. We have like 15 people in our security, more or less 5 is pretty active, 62 committers, 32 PMC members. We are huge projects, more than 3,000 contributors. And the important thing is, like, we are big enough to attract funding. The fourth F that Michael mentioned.
It's resource.
Yes, yes.
It's even more value. Money?
Yes.
It's hard to make it turn into people. People working on projects?
Yes.
That is what matters.
Yes, and we have stakeholders who are supporting our work, like I am an individual contributor. I'm full-time, or I tend to say 150% time open source contributor, and I'm fully paid by Google, by Astronomer, and few other customers or users of Airflow who just chose to pay me because they think it's great if I'm a contributor or committer there or PMC member. So we have a lot of sources of this money, people, energy, and focus. We also have like sovereign tech fund interested in us. So the part of the security improvements in the last year we've done, or the 2023 were financed by the sovereign tech fund investments, and they paid for these reproducible builds, for example. Now we have Alpha Omega fund, but are we secure? Can we say that we are secure? If you look at our dependency tree, the number is much smaller because like we've already removed some of those, and this is not full number, not 719. But right now, if you look at the dependency tree of Airflow, if you look down, it's 579. That's the number of lines you can, and that's the number of lines you cannot see actually. Yeah, we have a lot of them, and we have of course security regulations. We have more less than 2 years. Everyone is impacted. Everyone needs to be involved. We know all of that. I don't want to be repeating that. So. This is the NASBOM room, and I was thinking, like, why the hell did I submit talk to the NASBOM room? Because it's, I see at the NASBOM room, most of the people are talking about the creating NASBOMs, about attributes, about number of things, and nobody talks how to use them. Like, nobody actually says, like, how to make them useful, not only for regulators who require them, but how to use them, and we did. So experiments start because we are in the fourth part of what Michael mentioned. Yeah, well, so we have an experiment. So we are the experimental effort, which might or might not fail. Apache Software Foundation, PMC members of Airflow, Python Software Foundation is involved. Alpha Omega Fund is involved. Some users are indirectly involved because, like Amazon, Google, they are astronomer. They are helping with that. We also have Open Refactory. And we are using CDXGen for generating our SBOMs, which is great help because from those SBOMs, we were actually able to draw very, very interesting conclusions. We use the, we have some security audits from OSTIF as well that we looked at. We have some external researchers. The idea that we have, we want to know our dependencies. We want to review and talk to all 700 of our dependencies. We will do that. I'm pretty sure of that. We are learning how to do that. We learn to how to automate that work of communicating or initializing the communication because we believe that we should talk to the humans, to the maintainers there. And we think that it's like how we as a project look at them is important, as we as a user. And we always remember the people. So the biggest part of it is like not to automate, not to show numbers, not to show spreadsheets. This is very useful and we do that. As a starting point, then we talk to people because this is where security starts. So we did some kind of an analysis on those 700 dependencies, and we came up with like 16 of them, and that was all automated. The whole thing that I show you, this is automated step. So we have some open PSF scorecards and results. We had some like description of those results. And finally, we designed our own automation, how to use the SBOM to generate actions that we can make based on that information. So we are not looking at numbers, we are looking like what we can do to help those dependencies. Then
I'll pass to you and you can continue. Yeah, I'll just stand here.
Sure. So when you think of the three tenors, you remember Andrea Bocelli, you remember Placida Domingo, and then there's the third guy. So I'll be the third guy. I'll just make two quick points. Number one is, when you look at 719 dependencies, what we are doing is we are looking at creating a capability to proactively go and scan into all of those 719 dependencies, or a few hundred in your projects, find previously undetected security bugs in them, and then work with the maintainers as well as you in order to manage those dependencies. So think of that. This is beyond the signal that is provided by software composition analysis tools, which is only giving you known vulnerabilities. We are talking about previously undetected security bugs. So in this case, out of the 719 packages, we looked at that in about 6 weeks and identified 14 new bugs, three of them high severity, and they have been right now mitigated by Airflow and by others. Point number two is, we all know that there's no love lost between the security researchers and the open source maintainers. And there's the drive-by PRs, there's the AI slops, these are like have become very familiar. So this is an actual story that I want to tell. So this is a vulnerability that we identified and we reported to the maintainers, and then nothing was happening. Then after a few days, Yerrick, he posted that he is involved in the Airflow project, and he he's consuming that particular, and Airflow is consuming that particular package, and it would be interesting for them, you know, if they have an eye on that. And then the response was, oh, I thought that this was an AI slop. It was just generated by an AI. We don't generate anything by AI. They are generated by computers because we can't, like, type everything. But they are not AI generated. But then people have perception of that. And then the story was very sweet. Like, then once it was explained to them, soon the vulnerability was fixed. The point of the story is, when you involve, security is a human problem. When you involve the downstream consumers into this conversation, between the security researchers and the open source maintainers, then we'll have a much amicable conversation, and oftentimes many of these vulnerabilities would be fixed. Thank you.
Okay. So let me quickly continue what the experiment has done. So, like, we identify 16 projects to start with, and we propose them to add security policies, follow up on secure workflows, propose enabling trusted publishing, following up on unpatched vulnerabilities they had, and we propose them, like, to introduce mandatory code reviews. So those are the actions that we wanted to talk to them. But really, it was about the conversation. Really about talking to them. Security is important to us as our users. And they are responding. The responses were very, very, very different. So we had but vast majority of, like, happy to get help. Actually, you know, I didn't put numbers here, but I have now more than half of the maintainers I talked to. They are eager to get help, and they are looking forward to it, or they are almost as big security freaks as me, which is pretty impossible or very difficult, actually. But they are very, very, very security freaks. Few of them didn't respond, but I didn't follow up yet. I didn't have bandwidth so far for that. Some of those developers said, go away, CRA is bad for me. And there was one Croniter. I don't know if you've heard about that. This is the story. So the guy which I contacted, who was following earlier communication of mine on the CRA, he said, I'm removing all my repositories, and I will remove it from PyPy. There is a very, very interesting case that you should look at. We are still discussing with him what's going to happen in March, because he still wants to remove because he's scared about CRA. That's another story.
Remember what I said about availability?
Yeah, exactly. So we hope it's not going to happen, but the fact that we started this conversation triggered the whole thing. And if you haven't heard that, you should look at that. So longer-term targets. We want to do full automation and coverage of all our dependencies. We want to run some targeted audits and projects in the projects that will be willing to do so after talking to them. All projects, regular incremental process, so we want to have it in the way that if we add new projects, we don't have to review all of them, we just get the new ones and then and talk to them. And we want to spread the methodology and findings to others so that others could do very similar thing. And we want to contribute to PSF, maybe hopefully this will become a PyPI kind of tool or feature or whatever comes out of that.
In conversation with another project, it's Python based, might try to repeat the experiment. So that's exactly what we want to do.
Exactly. So we are repeating that. So what you can do, things that security, if you are an open source maintainer, start similar efforts and do similar things. Know your dependency. Talk to your guys. Talk to people that you work with, you use. So know your dependencies. You might want to support similar security initiatives. Like if people ask for help in helping security of others, don't hesitate, just help. You can contribute security reports to us, to any other maintainers. They will also welcome that. And learnings.
Go.
Thank you.
Back to you. I haven't seen this slide in a long time, so I'm going to make up words. I think I've already said this a few times, though, right? You, as a consumer of projects and as someone who's being consumed, right, are part of a human graph, a web of significant stickiness. It is hard to make you go away. It is hard to fix your problems. It's hard for you to fix other people's problems. If you don't have a relationship with the people consuming your software and the people you are consuming, you are a victim of whatever happens to you in that process, and it will happen, right? We see it every day. And so your project security matters to people downstream of you. If you're working on this because you're paid to, then you should care. If you're working on two because you do it for the passion of and the love of the software, then you should care, right? We are no longer in a world where people can write software without worrying about these things. We don't expect everybody to be a security expert. That's not the goal, right? And I would be the first to acknowledge that there's a lot of work to be done to make this secure by default easier and so forth. But it really does start with actually knowing that you are in this graph and paying attention to it. We have a few other small takeaways. I don't think I'm even going to speak to this slide, right? Like, human problem. The risk is growing exponentially. We have sustainability as part of this, and everybody has to have this be a priority. Okay, we'll take questions. Do we have time for questions?
Yes.
We actually allowed.
Thank you for.
Awesome. Okay, we'll start. I'm just going to arbitrarily go over here. Yep. So the question was, how do we get our project scanned by the security sort of scanning processes that we have? It's a great question, and the answer is look downstream into your dependents and find one of them that has engineering resources and money, unless you already have the resources and money, to get that work done. Also, the rate of change in this space, I mean, their team has been doing amazing work. There's so much velocity happening in this space now, right? Go look at the things that are out there and figure it out. You know, and it doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to be more than you're doing right now, which tends to be very close to zero. Again, I don't know your project. I'm sure it's been great. There was a gentleman here. Yeah.
Similar question. How do you use any specific tooling? I saw a spreadsheet with the dependencies and
all. So for now, we are just... So are we using specific tooling for that? There was a spreadsheet there. So we are for now developing as a part of our project as Airflow. That's a part of Breeze, which is a development, release management, and SBOM management tooling that I have. But the end goal is to be able to produce similar tooling for others to use. That's what we want to do. We want to improve that, iterate on that, and then when it's going to be ready, when we are going to release it. But basically, it takes a number of signals from different places, like starting from SBOM, going through the like OSPF scorecards and so on, just putting it together. It's a glorified Python script at this moment, yeah? But yes, we plan to make it kind of publicly available and reusable, but you know, it's three times more expensive to make something reusable after you make it usable first for you, so it will take a little bit of time.
I also hope to have some case studies written, or work together to sort of just talk about the methodologies as well, so. A lot of this is not rocket science, you just have to do it. I'm getting that sense that we have room for maybe one more question. Are there any more questions lurking in the back of the room? Going once, going twice. Thank you very much. It was a real pleasure to be with you guys today.
Thank you.